League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Squawker Talker is brought to you by BetBall, the social sports betting app and home of the Squawker Accumulator. Download the app at squawk.app/betball and challenge Squawker, join our accumulator, or make your own. Follow the link in the description. Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm joined today by three guests. Jamie Hinks from BetBall is back again. How are you doing? Good weekend?
Very good weekend, Greg.
Very good weekend. Any reasons as to why?
Big Sam, he's had the effect.
Big Sam has had a big effect on players, which we're going to get onto very shortly. Chris Henniage is in, finally, from the front three. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it?
It has. It took a three-hour train ride, at least. So I like to think I've shown some commitment.
Well, we appreciate it hugely. And Mitch Wadden is here, Squawker's very own, Cardiff resident in London for a week. How's it going?
Yeah, it's weird being up in the main city, but I'm enjoying it.
In the main city. We had another weekend on the Squawker BetBall Accumulator. If you've been following us on the BetBall app, you'll know that we got 2 out of 5 right this weekend. So that's probably not progress. That's probably the opposite of progress, isn't it? We expected goals in Huddersfield versus Sheffield Wednesday in the first leg of their playoff tie. We went for over 2.5 goals. It ended 0-0. Thwarted, absolutely thwarted. That's not very good. Arsenal did the business for us, though. They beat Stoke 4-1 with 3 second-half goals. We had them down to win the second half, so that worked out quite nicely. Spurs also held up their end of the bargain with a little bit of help from Man United. We went for over 2.5 goals. It ended 2-1. For those who are good at maths, that's 3 goals. We're in. And so close yet so far, we put down 11 corners for Palace versus Hull. That game only produced 10 in the end. And finally, Liverpool's problems getting goals. We thought they'd be under 1.5 goals at West Ham at London Stadium. How wrong were we, Mitch?
Very wrong.
Very wrong. We'll get onto that very shortly. But more on our next BetBall Accumulator later this week. And do check it out on the app, as I've said. The link is in the description. But moving on now to the Premier League action this weekend, we begin with a game that we didn't just decide the title. We kind of put to bed everything that we knew was going to happen anyway. Chelsea beat West Brom 1-0 at the Hawthorns on Friday night. It's all over, isn't it, Jamie? Yeah.
100% all over.
Worthy champions?
yeah, definitely. Conte's done so well in his first season there. Still managing to, like, it's just, this is the thing that title winners do. People like Michy Batshuayi will play however many minutes it was all season and pop up with a goal towards the end. Just the way he's done it's been so impressive because, I mean, in that Arsenal game, the away match at the Emirates, they looked so, just so poor. And then he's just literally like, right, I'm doing my thing now, putting my formation in there. And it's been excellent for them.
Just a shout on Batshuayi. I mean, he's only played 127 league minutes this season. What a way to win it. What a player to win it. There's been a lot of criticism about him, but he came through in the end, didn't he, Chris?
He's going to be great on social media now. You thought he was good before. He's going to ramp it up like you've never seen.
Forget player of the season, young player of the season. Do we need tweeter of the season now?
He was bantering off kids long before he did anything of note with Chelsea. He's going to ruin them now.
But Chelsea have, just speaking about substitutes and rotation of players, Chelsea have used the fewest number of players this season of any other team in the league. People may know that Leicester did the same last season when they won the title as well. But was the way they won the title with Batshuayi coming off the bench to get the goal, along with the impact made by Fabregas and Willian earlier this season, was that actually a testament to the fact that while they might not use too many players, the players they do use, they really do deliver, and it's a testament to Conte's squad as well as his team?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a testament to Conte's management style as well. I think it's easy to forget that in January, he allowed Ivanovic and Oscar to both leave, who were two crucial players for Chelsea in years gone by. So clearly didn't fancy them for his squad. So I feel like Fabregas and Willian will have almost been rejuvenated by, well, he wants us to stay. He wants us to be a part of this project. And clearly they feel like they're an important part of what's going on at Chelsea. And they put in brilliant performance.
It is quite strange to see two such high profile and highly regarded players kind of happy with a squad role, isn't it, really?
It is, but then we're assessing it that way from a distance. I imagine if you're in the camp, it's probably not portrayed to that way. It's given a lot more of an importance. I always think back to like Liverpool in the 70s and they would say that the squad of 14 players. We were just so together. It didn't really matter who was on the bench and who was starting. because we all had a role. We were all considered champions at the end. And I think really, if you start partitioning people as well, this was a key player and this wasn't, you kind of lose the idea of what champions are, because there'll have been random goals and random moments that if you watch that season review or you're a Chelsea fan, you say, actually, this assist from Fabregas was hugely important in keeping us where we needed to be.
I always think we're talking about players that have an impact indirectly on championships as well. I always think of Pepe Reina for Spain. I don't think he played a single minute of winning those three trophies, but he was like the joker in the pack, the literal joker in the training room, in the dressing room, which is on the training pitch, just make people laugh, keep the momentum up. But in terms of those players, they haven't sulked, they've just got on with the job, they've made it happen. And that's some people have said that's a contrast between Conte's management and Mourinho's management. This was probably inevitable, but there's been some questions on social media, Jamie. Was this Conte showing Mourinho up, or was Conte benefiting from Mourinho's work?
Well, it's a great team that's there in the first place, but I think he is showing him up, because I mean, it always seems to get very toxic with Mourinho after a certain amount of time wherever he's been. I'm expecting that to happen at Manchester United at some point as well, maybe after he's won a trophy. But yeah, I think there's a bit of both, because there was a very good groundwork there in the first place. Everyone forgets that season that they had where Fabregas got all those assists in the first half of the season, and they just steamrolled through that league, and it's not an easy league to win by any means. I think also with these players that are staying there, they know that next season there's going to be far more games. They know they're getting European football, so they know they're going to play more. So I think that may have a bearing on the fact that they've kind of not kept quiet this season, but are happy to play sort of a 1.5 role, maybe. Not a secondary role.
But there is one thing that Conte... Well, there's a few things that Conte hasn't quite surpassed Mourinho on at Chelsea yet. Mourinho is one of only two managers, along with Alex Ferguson, to retain the Premier League title, defend their title win. It'll be interesting to see whether those players that weren't sulking this season do sulk next year, Mitch, as the team go on. But Chelsea are on track to become only the sixth team to ever breach the 90-point mark as champions in the Premier League this year. Where would you rank them amongst the other teams, the other great teams of the Premier League era? You don't have to actually give me a 1 to 25 ranking. Are they done enough to be one of the greats? Are they one of the greats, or are they just a bit of a middling champion?
They've had a really, really good season. You can't understate the job that Conte's done at Chelsea, but at the same time, the competition, with exception of the Spurs, has been poor. We expected a lot more from Manchester City, Manchester United.
You think in the summer it was Manchester's title to lose?
Well, we all predicted either City or United to win it. I'm sure we did. And most of us had Chelsea perhaps getting back in the Champions League. So that's a real testament to what Conte's done with the squad. In terms of the other teams that finished with more than 90 points, I think Mourinho's first Chelsea got the most, 95. So obviously they're up there for a reason, did a great job. I really liked the United team, 2009.
There's been a few 2000, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, the...
We've done it a few times, actually.
All those Manchester teams. Tevez, Ronaldo, Berbatov, I just thought a great counter-attacking team. So in terms of the teams I personally enjoyed watching play, it would have been the United one for me.
Fair enough. Chris, what about yourself? Where would you place this Chelsea team?
I think the competition thing plays a significant part. I think the treble-winning Man United team was good because they had the competitions to deal with, which made a massive difference.
You compare that with Mourinho's moaning about fixtures now, it kind of puts into perspective, doesn't it, really?
Massively. And I think Arsenal's Invincibles, they were good. You have to consider them as well. I actually think Blackburn, I know they may not get much of a mention on a Premier League podcast, but they were pretty, very British in the sense, you know, we talk about like Klopp and gegenpress and how that's influenced by British football in the 80s. That was a really British side in all the best ways.
Mm-hmm. What about yourself, Jamie? Where would you place this Chelsea side?
I think they need to retain a title before they can really be on the top level. And plus, there wasn't a title race this year. There wasn't really a title race last year either.
It was a chase more than a race, wasn't it?
Maybe. But I think when you've got teams that are kind of... that aren't really chasing them. I mean, some of those United teams were in for a proper like battle. It was down to the last day. Even that City team that won so... like famously on the last day of the season with Aguero, it was a big title race. The last two titles haven't been title races, in my opinion. So I think you need to do that. And next season, if he does it with the Champions League and he gets more points than he did this season, then yes, they are one of the great champions, I think.
And one to look out for, but a question of how they will build on their squad. Saitasia on Twitter asks, what are our thoughts on Diego Costa and the proposed €90 million move to China? Should Chelsea take the money and run, Chris, or is he worth keeping around?
I would take it. I was talking to my old man about it the other day. He reminds me a lot of Tevez because Tevez, wherever he's gone pretty much, has tried to move on as soon as he's put his suitcase down. And I think Costa's in a similar predicament with England. I don't think he's happy here. I don't really think he enjoys it. He pushed really hard to go back to Spain.
Mm.
And I think if you can make that much money on a striker and maybe bring someone like Lukaku in, you've got Tammy Abraham as well. In fact, Chelsea in general have got, I would say, three or four youngsters that will come back in the summer and should be looking to try and push on at Chelsea. Nowhere else. You've got Tammy Abraham, Christiansen's a good example, even Lewis Baker at Vitesse. So I think take the money and invest it. You've got to take that opportunity when it comes.
I look at Diego Costa, and I think we were talking about squad unity earlier on, and I think out of all the Chelsea players, he is the biggest risk when it comes to that squad being divided. You said yourself that he wanted to go back last summer and push really hard for it, and then there were talks of a training ground squabble in January.
Yeah.
If that had gone any worse, could have potentially derailed Chelsea's title bid this year. That could have sent it off the rails and into Tottenham's hands. So with money like that, 90 million euros, it would be in Chelsea's best interest to take that and then invest in a striker that is going to buy into Conte's project.
Well, speaking of a striker that could be able to do that and may also kind of live up to the off-the-field actions of Costa as well, we've had a suggestion from Massimo Dariani on Twitter who says, please discuss Icardi as a Costa replacement. Crazy off the field, scores on it. What do you reckon to that?
He's definitely crazy off the field. He's a lot more subtle than Costa. I think in terms of direct finishing, I think he's a wonderful finisher. There are goals he scores that I don't know how he actually does it. But I don't think he's a target man. He's not a physical presence at all.
Mm.
I think the thing with Diego Costa is if you ask fans of other teams, they'll say to you, the one player that we hate our team to play against is Diego Costa. Yes, it's 90 million. Yes, it's a lot of money. And yes, he's 29 now, I think. But he scores so many goals, and he literally did hit. He hit the ground running as soon as he got to the Premier League. You can't just go out and get like, is Icardi going to do that? It's a big risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he hasn't scored as many goals in 2017 since he got denied the January move as well. So is he having a own personal breakdown to oversell it?
But then I guess if we go back to what we're talking about every player has their role to play. I think Costa still has. It depends how you do the methodology, but he's won the most points for Chelsea than any other player. Yeah. He's won any team in the Premier League this season. So
I think he gets a lot of sort of goals in 1-0s and stuff like that. He's not like a Lukaku who will get like four.
If you remember the start of the season when the system wasn't in place yet and Chelsea were literally limping along, he was the guy getting that goal to get them over the line. So is there a sense that, I mean, you can spend a lot of money on a striker, but as you say, it's going to be you have to be lucky to get a striker that hits the ground running as well as Costa did.
I think you are but I mean, 90 million, I just...
it's ridiculous money.
It's stupid. And like, if I was him, I'd take it. Like, they're going to pay him, Lavezzi's on like 750,000 a week. Like, Costa will probably be on more than that.
Yeah, well, they've said that if they sign Costa, it would be like the signing that changes Chinese football. I think that's someone from the Super League actually said that. So he'll be sure to be given a hefty bonus for being that guy. But before we move on to the other games, West Brom beaten by Chelsea. There's been accused of already being on the beach, their team. But I don't know, they held up pretty well against the Blues, made them work for their win. What next for West Brom and Tony Pulis? Have they already reached a glass ceiling, Chris?
Close, you've got to think. You've got to sign someone really good and convince them to go to West Brom. And I don't mean that as an insult, but it's you're going to be a marquee player if you go there in the summer. Whereas I don't know how much the players they've got kick on as it stands. Rondon's on the older side. You've even got Chadley on the older side. There's no one who you think has got a couple of levels to jump up.
But I don't mean disrespectfully either, but does the club have any more levels he can go up? Because the reality of the Premier League and the money and how it all goes is that top six, you need a sugar daddy to break into it. Everton are kind of like the bouncer on the front of the club, aren't they, at the moment? I'm sorry, lads, you can't come any further. Can West Brom ever get beyond eighth unless they get a sugar daddy of some kind?
If you shop abroad, I think you can. Because that's the thing, the rest of Europe isn't on the same financial category. So if you're smart with the money, definitely. I can't speak with great knowledge to what West Brom scout is like. That's the problem.
New owners, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They have. Am I right saying new Chinese owners?
They've got input. I don't know if they're going to be supercharged in the financial department.
In terms of finances, it'll be really interesting to see what they're willing to spend this year and how much faith Pulis has given with money. Because we've seen with Pulis, he prefers older, stockier, hardened players.
How much is Peter Crouch these days?
He signed a new contract, didn't he? So I don't.
It'll be very expensive.
He's
then.
Now And Stoke's joint top scorer, so I don't like their odds of getting crouchy. But
Pulis did waste a lot at Stoke as well. There was a lot of daft Andrew Davies for $3 million type signings that just never played.
And that was back when $3 million was worth a lot of money.
Exactly.
As well.
Didn't he sign James Chester for $8 million as well, and he's only played like six times.
I might have written a report as to why that was good money. And that
I heard
terrible.
You on a radio saying that was good.
Let's move on.
Well, they sold him for more. So strictly speaking, you're kind of right.
Moneyball Tony Pulis, absolutely smashing it. There we go. We'll move on swiftly from that idea to the decisive result at the other end of the table. If Chelsea won the title by beating West Brom, Crystal Palace resigned Hull City to relegation with their 4-0 win to also keep themselves up in the Premier League, which Jamie is very happy about after a very, very good weekend for Big Sam. Marco Silva's side, their resistance broken, beaten by a Palace side that ultimately outclassed them and secured their survival, as well as handing safety to Swansea as well, who beat Sunderland 2-0 on Saturday. Ranocchia's error led to the floodgates opening, didn't it really, Jamie?
That was it. As soon as that happened, you could see a big smile on Sam's face because he knew I can just do what I like to do. I think Hull had 75% possession in that game, which just says it all, really.
Big Sam teams just love to just sit back and
That game, I mean, we were kind of worried that he'd go out and play for a draw, and who knows if he hadn't scored that goal so early, maybe he'd have done that. But a really good performance in the end. It just told that when you get Tompkins back and you get Kabai back, it just adds so much more to that team. Mm. As much as I like Delaney, he puts his heart and soul into it. He's just not got the ability anymore. And I think when you look at Hull, I just don't think those players have the ability. Mm. Like Grzycki just... He was getting so annoyed with his teammates yesterday because they just don't have... They're nowhere near his level, some of them. Like, they're just playing balls that go nowhere near him. And plus, you have to worry about that club if they don't keep Marco Silva. The fans started singing at Alam again yesterday. They still don't like him. But if they don't keep Marco Silva, you do have to worry whether they'll even make it back up next season.
Mm. I mean, you do look at the Palace squad list at the moment, and they've got a fair amount of decent players, actually. It's not a bad side. Okay, it's patchy in some areas, but they've got some real talent there. In a similar sense to Tony Pulis, what can Big Sam do at Selhurst Park if he stays on? What could he build there?
You've got to think the peak for Allardyce is Bolton in Europe. So theoretically, probably the same with Palace. Because the players you've got, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think they're quite set for an Allardyce side. You look at Townsend, Kabai, I think, plays much better on the counter-attack when he's got space to pass into.
So can strike, innit? That's it.
Yeah,
that's
essentially, I watched Kabai for a long time and he was never really someone, I think, that could pick spots in a very organised defence. Mm. But if you manage to win the ball back and the opposition were far up the field, he was perfect. Mm.
Well, that's why he was so good for Newcastle, isn't it? Because he would just basically, teams would be coming at Newcastle thinking, oh, these guys are nothing, and just slice through them.
Yeah, and you look at, like I say, you look at Townsend, you look at Zaha, who I think is very good, if you can keep him. Yeah, the London appeal, I think, helps a lot as well. Mm. It sounds definitely daft, but if you can say to a player, look, you're going to be living in London, as bad as it sounds to football fans like us, who are probably like, no, it's all about the heart and like, you know, romanticism.
We're going to get onto the North East in a bit.
Yeah, going to death. But that's a huge influencer. It got Pye to West Ham, so I think you'd be naive if you don't think Palace could achieve a similar signing, hopefully with a better outcome.
They've got a goal scorer as well. Like, Benteke scores so many goals. Like, I have this argument with people every week. They're saying like, oh yeah, but he doesn't do anything else. I'm like, yeah, but Glenn Murray wouldn't have scored 15 goals this season. Dwight Gayle wouldn't have scored 15 goals this season. In the Premier League.
We'll see.
Yeah. Right, cool.
I kind of think it's Benteke. He's not a sprinter. He's like a distance runner. He takes a while to get going, but when you get towards the end of the season, every year, he just seems to come with the goals in the last like third of it, doesn't he?
Ball just sticks to him as well. Like, if we had Mandanda in goal all season, someone who could actually accurately kick a ball to someone. no offence to Hennessy, because he's been good the last few weeks.
You can't say no offence when you said someone that could actually kick a ball.
His shot-stopping ability is very good, but his kicking is absolutely atrocious.
One goalkeeper's got the hands, the other one's got the feet.
Yeah, that's we need them both together.
Yeah. Is that, I don't think that's allowed though, is it, Mitch?
No, you're not allowed to have two goalkeepers anymore.
Very sad. But Zaha, do you reckon he's going to stick around at Palace, or bigger things will come for him?
I think it would be most beneficial to Zaha to stay at Palace for another year. There's, you know, obviously talk of Tottenham's the big one, and Arsenal have been linked a few times, and even Man City a little bit. But I do think he's had a really good year despite Palace's troubles, and it would be more beneficial for him to stick around for at least one more year, get a solid year under Allardyce, who clearly loves Zaha.
Because he didn't seem too sure about him at first, but he's playing him week in, week out.
No, and I think that's testament to Allardyce's man management skills. He's obviously put his arm around Zaha and said, come on, you're going to be the boy that gets us out of trouble. We need you to link well with Benteke, Townsend.
And if you play well, there's a pint of wine in it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. so I think I think there will be offers, and I think if Palace can resist them, it'd be better for Zaha to have another year at Crystal Palace. Mm. And I think there's a lot of potential in that Palace team to now push further up the league and possibly even top 10.
Maybe the bouncer that is Everton will have another assailant on their hands next year. But just looking at the other kind of figures in this match and their future, Marco Silva, what next for him, do you reckon, Chris?
I think he's got a Premier League job if he wants it. You look at his work at Estoril. I did something for Yahoo where I went in kind of depth and spoke to people about that. And the job he did there was unreal. Mm. Like, it's like something out of a movie almost. and the fact that he came into Holland was so adaptable and pragmatic, that will appeal to a lot of clubs.
Mm. The impact he had so quickly was just incredible.
Yeah, and the fact that he could comfortably deal out Livermore and didn't complain about it, got on with it, brought in players that actually, you think if he had a little bit longer, with no disrespect to those who were in the job before him, you probably think they stay up. And that's a massive testament to him. And I think it's no surprise that he's linked to Inter and things like that because he's a good young coach.
Mm. Just to stick with you one second, obviously Sunderland and Middlesbrough both down along with Hull. Newcastle coming up from the Championship for next year into the Premier League. But what does the future hold for football in the North East in terms of top flight football? And is this a blip or is this maybe a long-term decline?
A lot of Channel 5, I can tell you that. but I think financially, it's a massive gap for them to try and get to. Roy Keane said it many years ago, you've got to pay a bit of a tax to players that come up north, at least to the northeast, because it's not as desirable to families and things like that. Mm. You've got to appeal really to a player's emotions if you want them to come up there. I think the long-term projection, Middlesbrough, I think, will be okay in the Championship. I think they'll sit there for a few years. Sunderland, your guess is as good as mine, chaps, because I've got no
idea. It looks
a
little bit like a Leeds United scenario for me. Do you look at their accounts? I think the Swiss Ramble, I think we talked about it last week actually on the pod, their accounts are dreadful. Like, they've got so much debt. Their turnover to wages is obscene. I think only Villa have got more at the moment in the top two divisions or something. So Sunderland, it might be a case if they go to the Championship and they can't reinvest what they do get from the players they sell.
Leeds had something to sell, that's the thing as well. Yeah. Sunderland might get Pickford, Corney in there.
Pickford is the new Alan Smith. That's
he won't appreciate that.
I'm sorry, Jordan. Sorry. Regular listener, I'm sure.
He's from Washington. I wouldn't even try it. But they've got a few, and I mean a few saleable assets, but once you strip those assets, then, as you say, I think Leeds is fantastic is possibly the wrong adjective, but it's a good comparison because I imagine there'll be a lot of free transfers in the summer because Ellershaw hasn't got the money, has been trying to sell. And for the longest time, I think, honestly, American owners have an issue in this league because the scope for failure in football is massive.
Yeah.
In America, with single-entity sports, the pool of talented individuals is small and it's regulated by just common sense. In England, you can go and pay 3, 4, 5 million for a random French centre-back and he could be Corney or he could be an absolute boom song of a player.
An absolute boom song.
I was trying to think of Valentin Roberge, the French centre-back they did bring in who wasn't very good, but that scope is part of the reason I think he's failed, and I don't see it changing anytime soon for him.
There's an American interest at Palace, isn't there? Has that altered how things are run in the south of London?
Yeah, not really, no. I mean, I think the most of their money is on this, when we redevelop the stadium, it will be on that side of things. I don't really think it's got a huge amount to do with player sales, and Parrish is very much still the man in charge there.
It just helps when your manager isn't insulting the owners like one Alan Pardew.
Exactly, like that. But you knew as soon as he said that, he was gone.
What was it he said? Oh, we haven't got football people in this club. It's like, Alan, don't do that. No.
Like he knew he was going anyway. Yeah.
So. I'd want time with the Eagle if I was investing in Palace. So I want to take him for the weekend. No questions asked, I just want him for the weekend.
Now to the race for the Champions League spot. So still two places up for grabs, third and fourth. Obviously, you get third, you're straight through to group stages. Fourth, you have the qualification to deal with. So there is incentive to finish as high as possible. But Liverpool seem to be holding the advantage. They did slip away, but they beat West Ham at London Stadium. A game that a lot of people, Mitch, said should have been a bit of a banana skin for them.
Yeah, I was at the London Stadium yesterday. And to be fair to West Ham, the first 20 minutes or so, they looked really up for the match. There were glimmers of the team that played against Tottenham. Sam Buren wasted a really good chance, I think, within 5 minutes. But the minute Liverpool got the first goal from some really poor West Ham defending, there was only one way this game was going.
It was weirdly easy for them in the end, wasn't it? Really?
Yeah, it was a really strange match because West Ham went in 1-0 down at half-time. Should have been at least level because Ayew hit the post twice from about 1 yard out. But whatever Bilic said at half-time, it had the opposite effect because the wrong West Ham came out And Liverpool came out even more up for the match than they were in the first half. And it was, I think that's a real testament to Jurgen Klopp.
We've been talking a lot on this podcast about Jurgen Klopp's plan A's, if plan B's or lack thereof. He started with Sturridge and Origi on the pitch. They'd only played 42 minutes of league football together all season prior to facing West Ham, Jamie. Did you see anything in that combination that did the business? I know Origi wasn't actually that good, but is this what they should be trying to do to get around the fact that Mane just isn't able to play at the moment?
It's nice to see him try it, and it's worked. So yeah. That's, I think, in itself, as West Ham weren't that bad. And this was a decisive game. Liverpool knew they needed to win it. I mean, next week I'd fully expect them to win, but they knew that Arsenal were breathing down their necks, and to do it in this situation is really impressive, I think.
In midfield, to talk about attack, Philippe Coutinho played a new role as a kind of the central man rather than out wide. Interesting Barcelona, some people said he could be the Iniesta replacement that they need. Were you impressed by him in that role? I mean, that's a big billing I've just given the poor guy there.
I was. I like him a lot as a player. I think he's wonderful. One of my favourite football stories ever, Coutinho, 16, goes to Inter, obviously can't play because he's under 18. First training session, comes up against Matarazzi, nutmegs him, and the physio pulls him to the side at the end and says, look, you do that again, I'll buy you food for the rest of the week while you're here. Coutinho tells the story is then afterwards, Matarazzi pulled him to the side, went, you do that again, I'll break your legs. And I just think that's peak. That is Matarazzi in one story.
But so he got really high class hospital food in the end, though. Was that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He got the little swipe card for the television as well. But I think Coutinho is a fantastic player, and yet amazingly was so close to Southampton as well. Mm. A lot of people seem to forget that Pochettino had a bid in there, and it was Liverpool that stole in.
Because he coached him at Espanyol, didn't he?
Yeah, he kind of reinvigorated him. His problem at Inter, I always found, was just injuries. He just kept breaking down and little small hamstring niggles. But I think as a Barcelona player, he's a better fit than Andre Gomez, but I don't know how much of a compliment that is to him, if I'm really honest.
It's a bit of a step up, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's a massive step up, which it could be the making of him, though, because I think there's times he seems to relish the responsibility at Liverpool. But then also he'd be with a better class of player, which could improve him in the same way that it seems to when he plays for Brazil.
Mm. So maybe Origi and Sturridge isn't the solution. Maybe going forward in the future, Liverpool should be looking at getting maybe a left winger to allow Coutinho to come into this midfield role in future.
I still think they should get a striker in, because I just think those teams at Dortmund were so good when they had Lewandowski as that focal point up front, and he hasn't really got one at Liverpool at the moment, in my opinion.
Joshua King is the store brand Lewandowski. What do you reckon to that?
I don't think he's at that level yet. I think I'd see him maybe as a backup, so maybe at Tottenham.
Because he has been linked, doesn't he? I think, yeah. Joshua King, yeah.
But not as a team that are in the Champions League. But who knows? He may go and do that.
But there are other players linked. Timo Werner at RB Leipzig. Some very interesting names that, obviously, a Klopp team's going to be linked with the best of the Bundesliga, aren't they? So something to look forward to in the summer. But sticking to West Ham, they ended Tottenham's title bid by beating them at home. They've indirectly snuffed out Arsenal's last hopes of top four by losing. Yeah. Bilic, stay or go? Has he done enough to upset the balance of London for West Ham fans to give him another season?
I think Bilic will stay. I think there's been a lot of talk about his future, but the board are going to give him the last year of his contract because they don't lose anything by doing that. Mm. This coming year will be so important, not just for Bilic, but for West Ham. But I really think he'll be given the chance to show that it was this year that was the fluke and not last season. But what the club really needs to sort out going forward this summer is who's in control of transfers.
Yeah.
This year particularly, there seems to have been a bit of confusion between David Sullivan and Bilic about who's going to take a lead. It's known that Bilic was the one that wanted to bring in Payet, Lanzini, Ogbonna, these players that turned West Ham into a much better side. So if Sullivan was the one that made the majority of the signings this year, who have been absolutely dreadful, I mean, the signing of the year award went to Edmilson Fernandez, who's 20 years old from Switzerland and has played about 7 matches. So it says it all about...
What are 7 matches?
Oh, he was great. Ooh. He was absolutely fantastic. And he's versatile as well. But it just shows how bad West Ham's transfer policy was this year. So I feel like you're going to see a similar situation to what happened in, probably not a good comparison, but in Allardyce's last season, in that there was backing given, almost a warning given with that, but that it would be down to Bilic, so he will have say on who comes in, because Allardyce made some really good signings in his last year at West Ham, so hopefully Bilic can do the same.
But there's a pattern with Bilic, isn't there? He kind of did this in Turkey, did it in Russia as well. He has a good first season, the second season all goes a bit awry? Does he need a third season to kind of get that monkey off his back?
Yeah, definitely. I think you make a fantastic point about transfers. You look at January and the way they approached trying to find a striker, it was terrible.
Or
and
pulling.
You look at the stuff with the insider piece where they were basically just, you know, that was so bizarre. I think they've got to stop releasing transfers through his son. I think that's quite unprofessional as well.
Bizarre, isn't it? Yeah.
Just in general, the way they approach signings, a lot of it to me seems like name brand shopping. It's not, where does this guy fit in with the team? It's, oh, well, Gökhan's from Chelsea and I know him, so he can come in. Right, okay, Fagüli. I just would love to sit in on the meetings and see what's said there, because it seems like two very different approaches trying to find a compromise when there really isn't one.
It sounds a bit like Ed Woodward and Mourinho and Van Gaal, I'm not going to lie. It's in a similar sense that this kind of chief executive figure who's not a football man in the whole kind of inverted commas type thing is kind of calling the shots, where maybe that you needed a director of football or someone with a bit more sense.
I think Sullivan took a big lead at Birmingham as well, and he really likes, I think that's why he got into it at the end of the day, is he likes doing that side of thing. He likes playing football manager almost. but I think to your point about the son, I thought that was absolutely terrible as well. I know he doesn't do that as much anymore. I think he's been told the insiders piece were an absolute joke, to the point where even Karen Brady started tweeting that we're not going to do it anymore. There is just such a culture of making headlines at West Ham that needs to be scrapped, and it needs to be down to business, and that needs to start at the top, because Gold and Sullivan are the worst for it. They'll go on every TV program possible and say, yes, we want Lacazette, we want Bakka, but it's never going to happen because you've told them you've got 30 million to spend on a striker.
It's mainly just good to look busy, I guess. Yeah. That's the whole thing.
They like to look like they're going to bring in these players and then sign Ashley Fletcher on a free.
Well, I don't think Ashley Fletcher will be going to the Etihad this summer, but the Man City are another club with a lot to do in the transfer market. They beat Leicester City 2-1 at the Etihad, but it could have all gone a bit differently. Riyad Mahrez had his penalty ruled out for two-touching his spot kick. That would have been an equaliser, and Pep would have had another awkward press conference to get through after that. Silva's goal to open the scoring, though, some people saying it should have been ruled off for offside. Sterling stuck his foot out to try and get a touch. I don't think he did touch it. The ball was going in anyway, but for you, was that a goal, or should that have been disallowed, Jamie?
Well, the rules, if you make an attempt to play the ball, it's offside, so... if they're sticking to the rules, which he was with the penalty, then it shouldn't have been a goal. But
yeah, it could. I think Kasper Schmeichel made a very valid point that there are three decent calls for offside in that move alone. The fact that he's impairing his line of vision, he's influencing Fuchs, and then he makes an attempt to play the ball. Choose which one you want to call for offside. Realistically,
I kind of went off on one a bit after that, because I thought just give it, because Schmeichel, let's say Sterling didn't move his foot in the way. That shot was going through. Schmeichel was reacting the same way he would if he didn't stick his foot out. Like, if
also, you think it shouldn't? You think it was right to stand then?
Yeah, yeah. But then I'm usually wrong about these kind of things. Anyway, I'm one of those guys who goes, "Oh, video technology, not sure about that." It's a bit
maybe ruin the pub debate.
Exactly. No. That's definitely not my point. We're not that kind of worms. That kind of worms will be back on the shelf for another time. But Mitch, am I a bad man here? Have I got it all wrong?
You're terrible, Greg. You're absolutely terrible.
I'm going to go with democracy.
This is a great room for this kind of conversation.
We'll leave him behind. I completely agree. I think there was three calls for offside that could have been made, and at least one of them should have been given. It is as simple as that.
It's as simple as that. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Leicester City.
Greg, you've been outvoted.
I have been outvoted. So it shouldn't have just been... It should have been a 1-1 draw to both of them then. Shouldn't have been a win.
Point split.
Oh. Well, it wasn't. It was a 2-1 win to Manchester City. Speaking of another decision that went City's way, Gabriel Jesus scored a penalty for City. How good could he be next season once he's got a proper pre-season and a summer under his belt under Pep?
I think he'd be very good. I think he's a better fit than Aguero for comparison's sake, because he wants to drop deep. He wants to influence the play as a creator, not just as a goal scorer. And I think you need that versatility for what Guardiola wants a striker to do. I've been impressed with him, actually, in terms of how he's come in, because... Brazil, for me, is a very funny place to evaluate talent, because it's a different culture first and foremost, and the style of play is very different. And I think for him to come in and seamlessly transition in the way that he has, it says a lot about him, never mind Pep Guardiola, because there are so many moving parts that he could be influenced in a negative way. I think with a better team, a better fit, hopefully a few more youngsters in there as well, because I think that's Pep's really big challenges to integrate youth. I think he could have a really good season next year.
But looking ahead to next season, we've had a question for you on Twitter from Chris at C Armband on Twitter. He says, Man City's defence next season, Zabaleta has said he's leaving, Sanyu and Clichy not looking great, Kompany injury prone, Otamendi, in Chris's words, his pants. And questions over the goalkeepers too. What is needed for Guardiola to be able to play the way he wants to going forward? Because obviously he demands a lot from his defenders to actually play the ball in a way that allows the attackers to move up the field as one big fluid wave, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, Kyle Walker's been the big rumour so far, and they'd fit quite well in there, I think. Mm. I'd really like to see Stones and company play for an entire season. I know it will never happen, but I think they've been really good since company came back the last few weeks. And to have those two in the middle and then get a left back in as well, because I mean, Fernandinho at right back, really, it's just
kind
not...
Kind of needed in the middle a bit as well, isn't he? So, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of just not needed
at right back. Navas has done all right at right back recently. Yeah. He's going to get a new contract, apparently, because of how well he's done in that role.
I mean, if you look at someone like Walker, if they had Walker and Rose in that team, like... be another level, wouldn't it? And I mean, they've got so many other players up for, like Sané has looked very, very good this season. Gabriel Jesus in the middle, and then another player in there as well, and they'll be a really, really fearsome prospect next season.
And you've got so many kids, as you said, coming up for the academy. Do you think next season's the year that Pep, just rather than spending another 50 million 60 million there on a new Mangala or a new Stones, start to look at the kids that are coming through instead?
Yeah, I mean, Angelino is someone I've seen a fair amount of. He was at NYCFC for a little bit and looked quite good. Mafio seems solid again.
A lot of them are out alone at the moment, yeah. Aren't they? Kind of getting a bit of experience.
It's difficult. I was speaking to someone at City about Angelino, and he thinks he's got the potential to be Premier League quality, which was a fairly big statement. The difficulty I have with this situation is there's a lot of hindsight talk. Mm. And what I mean by that is you look at Rose, I think it's a fantastic point. They would be great if they had Rose. But he wasn't a left-back when he started out. He was a midfielder that got converted there.
Yeah.
So you could sit there and go, well, they should have really identified Rose years ago.
You're saying Jesus Navas should be the front runner.
I see the corner you have painted me into. It was very impressive. But I do think... they need to be looking at the next generation. And is it Jadon Sancho who looks really quite decent?
Yeah.
I think they now need to be looking at defenders. I think it's hard to sign young defenders because they're always playing against their same age, so it's difficult to gleam if the talent's going to rise. But I think it's going to be a massive defensive overhaul for them, and it's going to cost them a lot of money as well if they want ready-made players that aren't Mafio and Angelino.
You need to overhaul the centre midfield as well, because that's been... nowhere near the quality that Pep is used to working with.
It's kind of a company situation, isn't it? Because Gundogan's made out of glass. So.
Yeah, you can't rely on Gundogan. There's talk of Torre getting a new deal when he's not the player he once was. You look at the midfields that Pep had at Barcelona and at Bayern Munich, they were the hub of the team. They orchestrated everything, and he just hasn't had that at City. So you talk about investing millions in the defence. I think you're going to see more money go into finding one or two really good centre midfielders that buy into Guardiola's philosophy.
Just being a Leicester very quickly, all set for the future for them? I mean, you look at guys like Ndidi, Gray coming through. Even if Mahrez and Vardy do move on, kind of got the skeleton of their next team already sorted, haven't they?
Yeah, I think Mahrez is going to probably go this summer. But I think Vardy's invested into Leicester now, and I think we'll end up seeing Vardy staying unless they
He's not going to Atletico?
I don't think so.
That's a shame, isn't it?
I'd love to see it. That would just be one of those amazing transfers we tell our grandchildren about.
Because then you could get, in the Jamie Vardy film, you could get Al Pacino playing Diego Simeone as like the ending. Like a wonderful cameo at the end.
That would be amazing, wouldn't
it's
it?
So good.
He might do it just for that.
Yeah. Got to live and die for that inch.
Just that little bit.
Yeah.
But no, I think there's... I don't really know. It's really difficult. It's... what we expected of Leicester this year, given they won the league last year, but no one seemed to have them in the top six or seven this year. So there was always that expectation that Leicester were going to do worse. Okay, they did significantly worse than we thought they would, but there is...
I thought they were going to win the Champions League, so I was very devastated.
But there is the makings of another good young team there, and I think what'll be more interesting is the management situation. Will they keep Shakespeare?
Whether they go for Marco Silva?
Well, I think that would be a really good appointment. I think whatever happens, we can't scoff at the appointment they made, because everyone laughed when they appointed Ranieri, and we know what happened there.
Maybe Roberto Mancini, ex-Leicester, former title winner.
That would be a very cheeky
another written off Italian looking for redemption.
His son does that a lot. I don't know if you've noticed. He tweets a lot about potential. It's really weird.
His Leicester shirt on.
Yeah, his son's at the New York Cosmos, and every now and again he'll tweet things about his dad in Arsenal and things like this, and you think,
is he like the one-man version of West Ham then, with his own insider column, his son tweeting out rumours?
It's a great shout.
Wow.
I think Leicester have got to be careful, though, because if they get rid of Shakespeare, it starts to paint them as a little bit of an unsteady ship that has no sentiment at all when it comes to keeping people on.
Stoke lost 4-1 to Arsenal this weekend. Arsenal hadn't won in the Pottery since 2010. How big of a win was this for Arsenal, Jamie? They're still chasing these hopes that are fading for the top four, but they you know, they really did put on a performance, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a big win at the time, and then Liverpool went and did almost exactly the same thing on Sunday. So, I mean, it's a good thing to get over that hump at Stoke, because it's a venue like that for Wenger. But I think you look at the other side of things, Stoke, like, what is going on? Like, they're now, 41 points? If they hadn't have, picked up a couple of wins, they'd be dragged right into that relegation situation. I think it's more interesting to see, what they'll do in the summer with Hughes, because he has spent, quite a lot of money there on people like Mbula, and who just haven't really done a massive amount.
We talk about Tony Pulis and how far he can take teams. Hughes is the guy brought in to kind of build on his foundation, but is he another manager that can take a team so far and then just kind of runs out of ideas?
I'm inclined to think so. I think that spell at City did his career a lot of good in some ways. Obviously, I think it's on fire in the end, but I think it made clubs of Stoke's size look and think, if we can get him, we could get up there.
Mm.
The truth is, I don't think they can. It's always very difficult, this, because it's so easy to pin it on a manager, someone like Mbula. You don't know who was influencing that deal. And maybe the chief scout was saying, look, you get this boy, he'll be perfect. And there's a... When it comes to transfers, I think I'm learning as I get further into this, really is a case of success has 1,000 fathers and failure's an orphan. No one wants to take responsibility for a transfer that tanks like Mbula.
Mm. Because he's a weird player, isn't he? He's looked really good at every club he's been at, but he just hasn't kept together.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one. I'm not sure why. I think if there's talk that Roma want him, so there must be a player in there.
Mm.
So you've got to think he'll probably go away, and it might just be a bad system fit. It might be something as daft and simple as that. We've seen it countless times with players who you play in one team, it doesn't work. You play in a different team, it works completely.
But to be fair, he's now, that's kind of happened to him at three teams now, which kind of suggests there's some weird things going on with him. But it's strange. You look at him, he's got the attributes, but it's not quite happening. But one player whose attributes have come to the fore this season, Olivier Giroud, two goals against Stoke. I think he's now got a better goals to minute ratio than some of the most highly prolific strikers in Europe this season. I think he's got more than Aubameyang per 90.
It's like third or fourth in Europe's top five leagues. It's absolutely ridiculous goals per minute ratio. I think he's criminally underrated.
He's been better almost off the bench. So where would you see his future in this Arsenal team? Should he be starting next year, or is it time they upgraded him?
I think Arsenal fans will definitely want an upgrade. I think Wenger has shown that he's immensely loyal to Olivier Giroud. I think the biggest influence on any potential deal will be Giroud himself. And if he wants to leave, I think there were talks of a return to France.
Mm.
And it will be all about what Giroud wants in this case. But I think if Arsenal can, they should hang on to him, because as we know off the bench, he is a brilliant plan B for Arsenal.
You've got to build a squad as well. What did we start this entire podcast on? Chelsea and the fact that you got role players.
Mm.
I'm sure he may not be delighted at the thought of that, given he's got aspirations for France and Benzema's in that weird limbo of, is he a part of it or not? But if I'm Arsene Wenger, I've got to look at it and say, actually, I need a forward that's not Yaya, Sanogo or Tchouba Akpom.
He's the only really out-and-out forward that they've got as well. When you consider Sanchez can play anywhere across that front line.
Danny Welbeck as well, but then he's injured all the time.
Yeah, you can't, again, not the most reliable and often thrown out on the wing when he is playing, so...
But just looking at the team that did play against Stoke, Mesut Ozil and Sanchez in this new 3-4-2-1 system looked fantastic, actually. They were brilliant against Stoke. FA Cup final to come. Even if they do win this cup, though, does this season feel like a massive missed opportunity for Arsenal? I mean, why have they left it so late to turn it on, Jamie?
Because they always do.
It's that simple.
Mic drop.
I think if they win the cup final, that's huge for them. Like, I know Arsenal fans will be like, no, we wanted to win the league, but no, like, winning in the cup final against Chelsea is massive for them.
That was a really good Arsenal fan impression, by the way.
Yeah. I like you put a little bit of a snooty voice. Yeah, yeah.
In terms of top four, though, is missing that really the killer? Because it's looking unlikely now.
It is, because Arsene Wenger has chosen to define himself by it. If he hadn't made the point about fourth place is a trophy, that kind of thing, the discussion really wouldn't be as big.
Mm.
But when he's made the point of it being like a trophy and being such an achievement for him year on year, he's practically said to everyone, judge me by whether I'm there at the end of the season or not.
Mm. Well, you're looking at the next match we're going to look at, which was Tottenham Hotspur 2, Manchester United 1. Spurs are going to finish the season their highest ever finish in the Premier League, going to finish second behind Chelsea. United are also going to finish outside of the top four by the looks of it, but they could win the EFL Cup and the Europa League. Out of those three sides, who's had the better season? Looking at the trophies, who won, Tottenham won't have any silverware to call upon.
The best football's been played by Tottenham, but when these players retire and look back 20 years from now, it'll be Manchester United if they win the Europa League.
Well, I guess they'll be through to the Champions League next year, won't they?
Yeah, ends justify the means for Mourinho in that sense. I said it, I think, maybe January, something like that. I said, throw all your eggs into the Europa League. Because realistically, with respect to everyone in that competition, the teams are of lower calibre on paper than Manchester United are. Whereas you've got to go to really difficult places like White Hart Lane and try and get a win if you want to get top four. It makes no sense. As for Spurs, I think they've got a lot to be proud of. Yes, Moussa Sissoko is a bad bit of business and it's enough to turn hairs grey on a young man. But with that said, if they can refine that process and get a little bit smarter with the money, which...
Maybe get Zaha instead next time.
Well, that's the thing. History suggests maybe they're not going to do that because you look at Soldado, Lamella to a much lesser extent. Whenever they've spent big, they've tended to go badly. But if they can get anywhere near a refinement on that process, then things really start to kick in for Pochettino.
Jamie, for you, who has had the better season if all things go as planned?
Tottenham have, because the progression there under Pochettino is so good. If you look at the last few, they are getting to something. It's just with them, you worry about, are they ever going to be able to... It's almost like with Arsenal, I know they beat Chelsea this season, but kind of in that decisive game, in that semi-final, that was an absolute killer for them. I think when I watched that, before that game, I was like, well, if Tottenham win this, I genuinely think they could probably challenge for the title in the end. But that game was a big one for them, and they're going to have to get past Chelsea to get anywhere near it. But if they keep progressing, then there's nothing to say they can't. United, it's a good season if they win the Europa League. Arsenal, as I said earlier, I think if they beat Chelsea in the final, it's a lot to be proud of.
We had a question kind of tying onto that with Spurs from Danny on Twitter, who says, do Spurs have the squad to go any further at present? And we've also kind of a follow-up related question from Helena, birthdaygirl81 on Twitter, who asks, which player do Spurs need to sign as a game-changer to step up in games such as their loss against West Ham and the loss against Chelsea at Wembley to really turn the corner next season? Obviously, Pochettino had to play Son at left wing back, didn't quite work against Chelsea. So who do you think they need to sign and where to really make this team kind of the unbeatable force they need to be next year?
Well, for that first question, I think they do. It's quite clear that they need a squad. They haven't got the depth that they need, and they had to play far more games than Chelsea this season. So 14 or 15 isn't going to be enough. It's going to need to be more than that, I think. In terms of actual players, I've said it a few times. I think just experienced players that have won things, because I think that's what they're lacking at the moment. It's a very good young team, but I think they need that player that can just come in. Like when Alonso went to Bayern Munich, it's a perfect example. Just get someone in that's won stuff, that's experienced and knows how to get you across the line at the end of a game.
We were talking earlier on about Chelsea and that squad roles, and it's come up a few times today, but it's the same thing with Tottenham, and Pochettino needs to sell any potential signings that he brings in on the role that they're going to have in the squad. You will be the guy that gets our late goals. You will be the guy that drives our team forward in the last 20 minutes. And he needs to find the right players that buy into that unity and that philosophy. They need a bit more grit, and I'd be looking at Pepe on a free from Real Madrid if they could convince him.
He's going to Inter, apparently, isn't he?
Well, if that's not on the cards, but if you want someone with that winning mentality, that do anything to win, you've got the perfect person there. Okay, if he's going to Inter, that's not going to happen, but people with that mindset.
I think that's a very astute point, though, about winners, because you look at who their best players have been for the most part this season, Wanyama, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, all have won things. Granted, Celtic and Ajax are not the highest standard, but still, they've had difficult trips. They've done it across the season. You need more like that. And maybe even, dare I say it, please don't swing for me, Zaha would be a decent shout as well. Someone that can break a player down
money for him
in a one-on-one.
But also, he did the business for Palace in the Championship, getting them up into the Premier League as well. So he's another player who's got experience of what it takes to get a side over a line when it matters. Which brings me to Wayne Rooney, 31. Terrible performance against Spurs. No, I'm not seriously suggesting that. But was that a game? I saw, I think, Jake Gallagher tweeted on Twitter. That's where people tweet. That this was his performance as Gary Neville's was against West Brom, where you realised, oh no, it's over. It's all over. Did you buy into that, or has Rooney still got something left in the tank?
No, I think it's all over. The difficulty I have with Rooney is you look at maybe Torres, Michael Owen, who started young and burned out. I think he hasn't had the discipline off the field like a Giggs, like a Scholes, to keep himself in peak physical condition. And now it's very much a case of the mind can do whatever it wants, the body is not reacting in the same way. And you look at the financial investment, I just wonder if Sir Alex Ferguson was still there, whether he would be anywhere near this team. Because
the, he was pushing him out the door, wasn't he?
That's the thing. With Sir Alex, he was very... cutthroat is probably too strong a word. He was very pragmatic in terms of knowing when to move guys on.
Ruthless.
Perfect. Yeah. Van Nistelrooy, a really good example. I don't think he'd show any sentiment to win, especially when he started to hold the club to ransom a little bit.
You do a lot of writing about MLS, and you're a man fully aware of football around the world. looking at Rooney, how he is at the moment, he's off the pace in the Premier League, but could he still do the business in MLS? Could he do it in China?
China, I can't really speak to. MLS, possibly. I was very 50-50 about Schweinsteiger because he hadn't played for a while. But since he's started, he's not looked bad at all, really. It's the difficulty with MLS that I think a lot of players struggle with is it's the longevity of the season. It's plane trips. I was speaking to someone at Real Salt Lake just a couple of weeks ago, and he said one of the guys from Europe was asking about travel, and he was shocked that it was like 3 hours to Chicago from where they were and 4 hours here. And you're on a plane a lot of the time, and that takes it out of the legs long before 90 minutes in Houston in baking heat does. So it's whether he can adapt his game and be comfortable not running around as much.
Looking at the end of the season, we talked about this Europa League or bust sense. What does it say about Mourinho's first season at United that one match decides whether it's success or failure? Does that underline maybe a problem with the method, if not the results?
I'm not sure. I think it's just a kind of it's been a gradual decline at United, hasn't it? I mean, it was obviously a huge decline under Moyes, and it's kind of gone up since then and then leveled off a little bit more. But if he gets them to the Champions League, that's where they need to be. So why not do it this way instead of coming, as we said, like instead of coming fourth, why not do it winning the Europa League? Mm.
This literally is a fourth place trophy in a way. It will get you the Europa League trophy with some silverware. Moving on to the dead rubbers elsewhere in the Premier League. Sorry to call it that, fans of these clubs, but we've only got a limited amount of time. We have to move on. Friday saw Everton beat Watford 1-0. We've got a question from Twitter from Ike, who asks, what next for Ross Barkley, Chris?
Move.
To Spurs has been rumoured?
Possibly Spurs. I think a change of scenery is good for him because it's difficult when you're a local lad because on the one hand, it can get you a lot more rope with the fans and a lot more time and patience. But there comes a point where if you don't do what they expected you to do, they then flip very quickly and aggressively. And I think for him right now, he's good in patches. He has his moments, undeniably. He's got talent. But I don't see that club or anything being sentimental towards him anymore, given their aspirations. So there's no need for him to share that.
Next season aspirations will be interesting for Bournemouth, who beat Burnley 2-1. On Saturday, there's talk of John Terry. There's talk of many other veteran players moving over there next season. Would that be a wise move? Or we talked about West Ham kind of going for reputations. Is Eddie Howe kind of making his own bed by doing that?
Yeah, a little bit. I think looking at the players they've been linked to with Terry and Defoe, you have to take them on an individual case. I don't think Terry is the right fit for them. I don't think he's played enough this year to show that he can still really perform at that level. Defoe, on the other hand, I think could be a really shrewd signing if they're willing to give him what he wants.
And that's goals.
He wants goals. Yeah. He's so it would be a split for me. It would be take Defoe but not Terry. But yeah, I think Howe has to be careful that he doesn't build up a reputation of signing almost past it players on extortionate money.
Is that what you're calling Jack Wilshere these days?
Yes.
Oof.
I don't get to quote Jurassic Park often, but they have spent so long thinking about whether they could sign John Terry. They didn't really look like they've thought about whether they should. Because I think Defoe's a different case. I think it's a very good point. Terry, no. It's the same with Wilsh. Even Jordan Ibe. I tweeted as much on Saturday night watching Match of the Day. Eddie Howe is the same manager that got Joshua King for about, I think, $3 million, around that figure. And then also paid $15 million for Ibe. He's very much swings and roundabouts.
$6 million for Brad Smith.
I was going to say, how much is Brad Smith?
Yeah. I think Terry should retire. I know no player wants to go, but you're not going to get any better. It's time to say goodbye.
Do they need Ian Malcolm sitting there, the mathematician, and saying, Eddie, come on, this is it. The dinosaurs are going to escape. Shut this park down. Could he be their director of football? Ian Are Malcolm you... from Jurassic Park. Oh,
I totally misread the question there.
Could he though? Where could was he up before?
Could a fictional character break for the fourth?
Would Ian Jen let him go?
I've seen that film far too much. I think a director of football would be a good shout for them though. The thing with Howe is he's done tremendously to get them this far up, but he's got next to no experience at the top. It's one thing to sign a player like Callum Wilson in the second tier, but actually if you look at their transfers through the leagues, he's had a fair few busts, Eddie Howe. Ranti, the South African lad that didn't pan out, and even down in League One, just players that, again, cost them a decent bit of money in that league and just didn't work out for him.
So maybe he's a great coach. We've seen his system work out quite well, so he just maybe needs that nouse next to him.
A bit of structure never helps.
Never helps?
Never hurts.
Never.
Spot the Newcastle fan. A bit of structure never helps. But I think if you can have a voice in there just to have the discussion, it's better than an echo chamber in which, again, you think 21 million for two Liverpool players that aren't first team seems like a good idea.
We're going to move on around the rest of Europe now just to look at what happened over the weekend. In the Bundesliga, in a season where people have been saying, where have the goals been? They turned up all in one go, really. RB Leipzig were beaten 5-4 at home by Bayern Munich as the Bavarians really won the title in style. Mainz won 4-2 against Eintracht Frankfurt to kind of give themselves a chance of avoiding the relegation playoff. Werder Bremen were beaten 5-3 by Hoffenheim as well, so the goals flying in everywhere. Darmstadt and Ingolstadt both relegated, but the final relegation spot, as I was talking about, is still going. Wolfsburg, Hamburg, Augsburg and Mainz could all slip in there. For people that don't know, in Germany, the third team in the relegation battle plays the third team in the promotion battle from the second division. It's a bit of a playoff situation. Very interesting. And in that sense, there was a battle for the top spot in the second division in Germany this weekend. The Stuttgart were beaten by Hannover. They were beaten 1-0. Both sides pretty much set to get the automatic places, but Eintracht Braunschweig, they're still in the running. They're probably going to finish third, and they're going to face one of those four.
Do you get a trophy if you win that promotion playoff?
I don't think you do, but you get the pride of, I think Hamburg have been in,
Arsene Wenger's lives have lit enough if you do.
Yeah. Arsene Wenger to Mainz next summer, maybe? Oof, maybe.
Why not?
In Serie A, Juventus still waiting to score their sixth straight title. Roma beat them 3-1. Heads maybe already turned to the Champions League final, where they will face Real Madrid next month. Spalletti as well, he said that he's not too happy with things at Roma, with the whole circus around Totti still going on. He feels like it's a distraction from his work. Totti has suggested he could stay on. He wants to keep playing football for Roma. He's, 62 now? So it is getting a bit of a distraction, isn't it, really?
It's very difficult. I mean, you look at one club players, Jamie Carragher, people like that, it's very hard to tell them, stop. Like, you know, call it a day. Because, you know, the thing is, I've spoken to players of that age before, and there's this point where your mind thinks you can still do it, and you need that Gary Neville against West Brom game to just kind of take stock and say, look, I definitely can't do this, and I don't want to drop down the league, so it's time to go.
Well, maybe it's worth Spalletti staying on, because obviously Monchi has already arrived from Sevilla. We want to talk about directors of football and transfer gurus. He is the man. Meanwhile, Napoli thrashed Torino, the other side in Turin, 5-0 to keep the pressure up in the race for those top spots. Real Crotone have now won 5 and drawn 2 of their last 7 games, which suggests the Great Escape could be on in Italy. They had looked all but down and set for relegation, so huge few results for them. In La Liga, the title race, however, continues apace, with Barcelona winning 4-1 away to Las Palmas, Real Madrid winning 4-1 at home to Sevilla, Ronaldo being Ronaldo again. They scored a wonderfully awful free kick when the rest of the team were down, I think, tying their shoelaces. We're really living up to this idea of Real Madrid being the villains of Spanish football, which I find really satisfying. I can't help it. And Neymar scored a hat-trick. He's not scored many goals this season. He's been more of a provider, but he was sensational away at Las Palmas, which, if anyone knows, is an island in the Canaries. So a bit of a... Talk about plane journeys in MLS. It's a bit of a hard one to go to. So
bit of a track.
Quite impressive to win 4-1 away there. Look at the fixtures ahead. Can Barcelona overtake Real Madrid to win the title in the dying seconds of the season? Barca have got Eibar and Alaves at home, while Real Madrid have to go on the road to play Celta Vigo and Malaga in their last two games. Looks a bit more tricky than home games, doesn't it, really?
If Celta Vigo had the Europa League final to contest, I would say there's very little chance. I could see it, though. There's just something... You always say this about races like this, that you can sense there's a twist in there.
It'll come.
It could come with Celta, I think.
And there's been a bit of controversy with the Malaga president saying some awful things about Barcelona on social media, I believe, Jamie. So could that be a bit of a gimme at the end of the season?
Maybe, but I mean, as you said, I think it's on that Celta Vigo game. They're in such poor form before that Europa League, around that Europa League semi-final. They've lost it now, so maybe that's the sort of push they need to get the result against Real Madrid.
We had a question for you about Barcelona from Carlos Zalvalar, who everyone knows Luis Enrique is leaving this summer. But have Barcelona lost their identity this season, Mitch, or is that just an easy cop-out for a poor season of underperformance?
No, I think there's an element of that, because you look at the signings they've made in the last, certainly last summer, in the last couple of years, the likes of Titi and Gomez, who has just been appalling, and Alcacer, the striker. It's just not been players that have got that Barcelona philosophy and mentality. And what we know of Barcelona is all their great sides, particularly most recently with Guardiola, is that everything good about Barcelona comes from within Barcelona through their amazing academy. And whoever comes in as their new manager has to recognise that, and they have to rely on their own resources rather than outside resources. Now, if the players that are coming through the academy aren't good enough, then they need to investigate that, because they've been good enough for the last 40, 50, 60 years. Why aren't they doing it anymore?
But hasn't been one unbroken chain of success, though, hasn't it?
No, there has been, you know, stumbles along the way. There have been times in Barcelona have not been
I mean, you're not going to get a Xavi and Iniesta every 10 years, are you?
No, and I think we have to remember that they are freaks, in a good sense. They were absolutely... And to get them along at the same time as well, and then you have someone like Guardiola, who's come up through the ranks of the club and recognised the quality that Busquets and Pedro had as well, where they might not got the chance with another manager. So I think the perfect storm was created under Guardiola, and that has to be remembered.
But they have gone a bit Galactico policy recently. But do you think it's a perception issue? Because you're not going to repeat what Guardiola did, really, are you?
No, I think the difficulty is it's like going to see, you know, Queen or something like that. If the band's not exactly the same, the output's not going to be exactly the same. There's going to be subtle differences. And I think when it comes to shopping at the top end of the market, a Galactico-type signing, I think they've got that down to a T. Neymar, Suarez is more than proof of that.
It's kind of the second tier signings they fluffed, isn't it?
Like, yeah, Gomez, that's the difficulty. And then letting Alves go, that seems worse and worse as each week passes. And you look at the academy. I had a chat with David Cartledge a couple of weeks ago when he was back up north for a bit, and the standards just dropped considerably. And such a foundation of their success was that academy. I think you make a very good point that a Xavi and Iniesta quality is very hard to get. But even the fact that they brought Suarez back said that actually that was what they were trying to do. They were trying to harness a little bit of La Masia.
Yeah.
But he had to go away to do that. So then I if I'm Barcelona, I'm looking at the process and saying, why didn't we keep him in the first place? And then we're able to give him that pathway to the first team.
You're moving now to Ligue 1. Monaco, one game away from the title. They still have a game in hand. They beat Lille 4-0 at the weekend. The goal tally for the season now going to 102 league goals. Absolutely ridiculous. Mbappe didn't score, but he did get two assists. We had a question through from Christian Van Slyke, who says, should Mbappe stay another year at Monaco?
Yeah, I think he should, but I don't know whether he will.
Money talks.
Yeah,
money
exactly. Talks. Like if they pay, I think a lot will depend on who Monaco do, because they kind of move on a couple. They are going to move on a couple of players. Maybe if they can get the money for Bernardo Silva or like Thomas Lemar, I've been heard may go to Arsenal. If they can get that money for them, maybe they won't have to sell Mbappe. But if there's like a huge bid that comes in, then can you really refuse that?
I mean, all the usual suspects are in for him, apparently. But are there any big clubs that you would say it'd actually be a good thing for him to go to them? I mean, you think of Mbappe at Real Madrid or Man United, he's putting it at loss, isn't he? But are there any big clubs you think, that'd work, yeah.
The only team that it would really make a statement for would be Arsenal, given that Wenger has come out publicly and said, I went and spoke to him last year, he's a player that I really want. That would be the only team I could think that it would be a really big statement for the future. I agree, I think Mbappe would be much better served staying at Monaco for another year because he knows the club and would be much more comfortable playing in that environment. And, you know, we're talking about the cycle of Monaco. You know, let's talk, they've already agreed a deal for Yuri Tielemans to come in the midfield, possibly to replace, you know, Bakayoko's been linked across.
Well, I think they've all been linked. I think by the sounds of it, Bernardo Silva's the one they're happier to sell this summer. So it seems like a signing to replace him.
Yeah, so I think Mbappe, they're not too worried about selling this year. And I think it's probably better to say, but yeah, Arsenal would be the club that, if any, they would need that calibre of signing.
Moving on now to more young exciting players in the Eredivisie, although the young side weren't the ones that won the title. Feyenoord won it with a count hat-trick in their final game of the season. Giovanni van Bronckhorst's side getting the glory in the end. But Ajax named the youngest ever side in Eredivisie history. I think they only had one player over 21, and that was
David Klaassen,
24 years 24, old. They have three teenagers on the pitch. It's ridiculous.
I got a hangover just watching Feyenoord celebrate. Unreal.
Imagine if they hadn't won.
Nobody's working in that city on Monday.
They'd have dropped the same amount.
But with less than 10 days to go now before they face United in Stockholm, can Ajax do it?
Part of me says yes, but I think it's the optimistic part of me in terms of it would be a beautiful story. With, I think, the image of 95 and everything still in the memory. The thing that impresses me, you look at someone like Dahlberg, he looks incredibly mature for his age. I mean, he didn't celebrate his goal at the weekend, kind of just, I think he by that point he must have known that Feyenoord had taken the lead because they scored after a minute. You look at people like him, Klaassen.
De Ligt as well, that video of him with the fans in the
exactly.
stadium.
Exactly, and taking ownership of the penalty against Lyon and saying, look, I made a mistake. Yeah. It's 17 years old to do that. And then you look at his centre-back partner, Vincent Sanchez. I've just been massively impressed with them throughout this season, their ability to handle pressure. Mm. And the benefit they've got is, I would say, slightly similar to that famous team that did it in the 90s. They go in as underdogs. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, they can't lose. If they tank, then everyone says, well, they're only kids. They've got years to come. If they do it, then it's a thing that will go down in history, I think.
United have got everything to lose going to this final because they're expected to win. And I personally think that the experience will pay, and we know what Mourinho's like in these sort of games. He will kill Ajax's creativity and take the 1 or 2-0. But this Ajax team's phenomenal. I love watching them play, and if they can keep them together, they could do some real damage in Europe over the next few
years.
But
then of all the managers you don't want a very young side to come up against, it's probably Mourinho, because he is going to make the most of every mistake possible.
That's the thing, though. I think even if they lose, I wrote something for Unibet that Ajax for me have been a massive fresh air for this competition. Same with Monaco. They have been the Monaco of the Europa League in that regard because they've come along and not only have they trusted guys like De Ligt, guys like De Jong, Van de Beek, they've given them a platform to succeed by not putting massive pressure on them. Mm. And I think even guys like Klaassen has stepped up because he's only 24. Yeah. And he's a leader in
there. The veteran of the side.
Yeah, it's maddening to think that at 24, he's the veteran of the side. Mm.
Looking ahead now to the midweek action, specifically in England. The Championship playoffs hit their second decisive leg to decide who gets to the final. Jamie, out of the two ties, who do you think is going to be making it into the final? For those that don't know what's happened so far, Fulham drew at home 1-0 with Reading to set up their second leg in Reading, while Huddersfield and Sheffield Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday. Can't get those two mixed up. Drew 0-0 in Huddersfield. It's going to be played at Hillsborough, the second leg. Out of those sides, who do you expect to see in the final, and who deserves to go into the Premier League?
I'm sticking with Fulham and Sheffield Wednesday. I think they'll be the two that will get in there. I'd quite like Fulham to go. I read a piece in the paper today. They're a bit worried that the entire team is just going to disintegrate if they don't go up. So maybe for that reason, whereas I think Sheffield Wednesday, they probably need to make quite a lot of signings. It looks like I don't really like the phrase that much. It looks like a very Championship side to me. Like, it's kind of Stephen Fletcher and Barry Bannon, people that have been there, done it, and maybe not done as well as they could have done and had to come back down. And like Gary Hooper, people like that.
Super duper Gary Hooper.
But yeah, I mean, they're all very exciting teams. That's why I think we had the bet on the over on the Huddersfield-Sheffield Wednesday game, and then we had two goals out of...
Maybe this should have been the week to put the bet on.
Yeah, maybe the second legs will be ridiculously exciting and we'll be lording over them. But yeah, I think I've got a funny feeling Sheffield Wednesday will do it because of last season they didn't go up, but I'd be very happy for Fulham to go up.
Mm. Were any two teams that you're looking forward to hopefully contesting the playoff final, Chris?
Fulham are the best team I've watched this season in terms of the way they pass it around. Huddersfield, I think they've run out of steam, really. Yeah. It's very Kloppy in the way that Wagner has them playing, pressing, that kind of thing. Sheffield Wednesday aren't very expansive, and I think if they don't go up, Carvajal goes and it all... I've not been that impressed with Wednesday either, if I'm really honest. Mm. They're a team that, from what I've seen, sit deep, spring, try and get Fletcher in the box, that kind of thing. Reading... I don't really know what Reading's identity is. I watch them and sometimes they're a little bit like Fulham. They pass it around. Other times they just seem to abandon that.
They're like the worst excesses of Van Gaal's Man United, I'd say. It's possession for possession's sake at times.
Definitely, that's a very good point, I think. And watching all four of them, I'd like Fulham to do it. Mm. I think the way they've played has been the most exciting to watch.
Mm. Mitch, what about yourself?
I agree with what you guys said. I can't really add much more than that. I think Fulham deserve it the most. They played the best football and certainly the best in form. There's a part of me, for some reason, that would like to see Huddersfield do it, just because I think for large portions of the season they've been
a bit different as well.
Seen a different sort of team. Yeah. Haven't seen a team like that come up, but I think as much as I'd like Huddersfield to do it, I think it would be Fulham.
Mm. Fair enough. Well, looking ahead to the other action in the Premier League, Monday night tonight sees Chelsea take on Watford. Tuesday night sees Arsenal against Sunderland. Tuesday night also sees Man City face West Brom. Wednesday night, Saints versus Man United, a replay in the EFL Cup final. And Thursday night sees Leicester take on Spurs. So lots of interesting matches to watch there. Do follow us on our BetBoard Accumulator to see who we're backing and by what measures at squawk.at/BetBoard. Again, you can find that link in the description to this podcast. Do download the app and have a look. Jamie, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast this week.
Thanks a lot for having me on again.
Yeah, no problem at all. Chris, it's been wonderful. We'll have to get you on again soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. And Mitch? You're making your podcast debut today.
I've absolutely loved it. I hope to
We've loved
soon.
It as well. It's been wonderful. Thanks for joining us and see you again soon.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.